It was like Saturday. People from the south end of the county passed our house in a leisurely but steady stream. Mr. Dolphus Raymond lurched by on his thoroughbred. "Don't see how he stays in the saddle," murmured Jim. "How can you stand to get drunk for 8 in the morning? A wagon load of ladies rattled past us. They wore cotton sunbonnets and dresses with long sleeves. A bearded man in a wool hat drove them. "Yonder's some Mennonites," Jim said to Dill. "They don't have buttons." They lived deep in the woods, did most of their trading across the river, and rarely came to Macomb. Dill was interested. "They've all got blue eyes," Jim explained, "and the men can't shave after they marry. Their wives like for 'em to tickle 'em with their beards." Mr. X. Billups rode by on a mule and waved to us. "He's a funny man," said Jim. "X is his name, not his initial. He was in court one time, and they asked him his name. He said, 'X Billups.' Clerk asked him to spell it, and he said, 'X.' Ask him again, he said, 'X.' They kept at it till he wrote 'X' on a sheet of paper and held it up for everybody to see. They asked him where he got his name, and he said, 'That's the way his folks signed him up when he was born.'" As the county went by us, Jim gave Dill the histories and general attitudes of the more prominent figures. Mr. Tinsaw Jones voted the straight prohibition ticket. Miss Emily Davis dipped snuff in private. Mr. Byron Waller could play the violin. Mr. Jake Slade was cutting his third set of teeth. A wagon load of unusually stern-faced citizens appeared. When they pointed to Miss Maudie Atkinson's yard, ablaze with summer flowers, Miss Maudie herself came out on the porch. There was an odd thing about Miss Maudie. On her porch she was too far away for us to see her features clearly, but we could always catch her mood by the way she stood. She was now standing, arms akimbo, her shoulders dropping a little, her head cocked to one side, her glasses winking in the sunlight. We knew she wore a grin of the uttermost wickedness. The driver of the wagon slowed down his mules, and a shrill-voiced woman called out, "He that cometh in vanity departeth in darkness." Miss Maudie answered, "A merry heart maketh a cheerful countenance." I guessed that the foot washers thought that the devil was quoting scripture for his own purposes as the driver speeded his mules. Why they objected to Miss Maudie's yard was a mystery, heightened in my mind because for someone who spent all the daylight hours outdoors, Miss Maudie's command of scripture was formidable. "You going to court this morning?" asked Jim. We had strolled over. "I am not," she said. "I have no business with the court this morning." "Aren't you going down to watch?" asked Dill. "I am not." "It's morbid, watching a poor devil on trial for his life. Look at all those folks. It's like a Roman carnival." "They have to try him in public, Miss Maudie," I said. "Wouldn't be right if they didn't." "I'm quite aware of that," she said. "Just because it's public, I don't have to go, do I?" Miss Stephanie Crawford came by. She wore a hat and gloves. "Mm-mm-mm," she said. "Look at all those folks. You'd think William Jennings Bryan was speaking." "And where are you going, Stephanie?" inquired Miss Maudie. "To the Jitney Jungle." Miss Maudie said she'd never seen Miss Stephanie go to the Jitney Jungle in a hat in her life. "Well," said Miss Stephanie, "I thought I might just look in at the courthouse to see what Atticus is up to. Better be careful he doesn't hand you a subpoena." We asked Miss Maudie to elucidate. She said Miss Stephanie seemed to know so much about the case, she might as well be called on to testify. We held off till noon, when Atticus came home to dinner and said they'd spent the morning picking the jury. After dinner, we stopped by for Dill and went to town. It was a gala occasion. There was no room at the public hitching rail for another animal. Mules and wagons were parked under every available tree. The courthouse square was covered with picnic parties sitting on newspapers, washing down biscuit and syrup with warm milk from fruit jars. Some people were gnawing on cold chicken and cold fried pork chops. The more affluent chased their food with drugstore Coca-Cola and bulb-shaped soda glasses. Greasy-faced children popped the whip through the crowd, and babies lunched at their mother's breasts. In a far corner of the square, the Negroes sat quietly in the sun, dining on sardines, crackers, and the more vivid flavors of knee-high cola. Mr. Dolphus Raymond sat with them. "Jim," said Dill, "he's drinking out of a sack." Mr. Dolphus Raymond seemed to be so doing. Two yellow drugstore straws ran from his mouth to the depths of a brown paper bag. "Ain't ever seen anybody do that," murmured Dill. "How does he keep what's in it in it?" Jim giggled. "He's got a Coca-Cola bottle full of whiskey in there. That's so's not to upset the ladies. You'll see him sip it all afternoon. He'll step out for a while and fill it back up." "Why is he sitting with the colored folks?" "Always does. He likes them better than he likes us, I reckon. Lives by himself way down near the county line. He's got a colored woman and all sorts of mixed chillen. Show you some of 'em if we see 'em."
"He doesn't look like trash," said Dill.
"He's not. He owns all one side of the riverbank down there, and he's from a real old family to boot."
"Then why does he do like that?"
"That's just his way," said Jim. "They say he never got over his wedding. He was supposed to marry one of the Spender ladies, I think. They were going to have a huge wedding, but they didn't. After the rehearsal, the bride went upstairs and blew her head off. Shotgun. She pulled the trigger with her toes."
"Did they ever know why?"
"No," said Jim. "Nobody ever knew quite why but Mr. Dolphus. They said it was because she found out about his colored woman. He reckoned he could keep her and get married, too. He's been sort of drunk ever since. You know, though, he's real good to those chillen."
"Jim," I asked, "what's a mixed child?"
"Half white, half colored. You've seen 'em, Scout. You know that red kinky-headed one that delivers for the drugstore? He's half white. They're real sad."
"Sad? How come?"
"They don't belong anywhere. Colored folks won't have 'em because they're half white. White folks won't have 'em because they're half colored. So they're just in-betweens, don't belong anywhere. But Mr. Dolphus, now, they say he shipped two of his up north. They don't mind him up north. Yonder's one of them."
A small boy clutching a Negro woman's hand walked toward us. He looked all Negro to me. He was rich chocolate with flaring nostrils and beautiful teeth. Sometimes he would skip happily, and the Negro woman tugged his hand to make him stop. Jim waited until they passed us. "That's one of the little ones," he said.
"How can you tell?" asked Dill. "He looked black to me."
"You can't sometimes, not unless you know who they are. But he's half Raymond, all right."
"But how can you tell?" I asked.
"I told you, Scout, you just have to know who they are."
"Well, how do you know we ain't Negroes?"
"Uncle Jack Finch says we really don't know. He says as far as he can trace back the Finches, we ain't. But for all he knows, we might have come straight out of Ethiopia during the Old Testament."
"Well, if we came out during the Old Testament, it's too long ago to matter."
"That's what I thought," said Jim. "But around here, once you have a drop of Negro blood, that makes you all black. Hey, look!"
Some invisible signal had made the lunchers on the square rise and scatter bits of newspaper, cellophane, and wrapping paper. Children came to mothers. Babies were cradled on hips as men in sweat-stained hats collected their families and herded them through the courthouse doors. In the far corner of the square, the Negroes and Mr. Dolphus Raymond stood up and dusted their breeches. There were few women and children among them, which seemed to dispel the holiday mood. They waited patiently at the doors behind the white families.
"Let's go in," said Dill.
"Nah, we better wait till they get in. Atticus might not like it if he sees us," said Jim.